The agenda is the public workshop preparation. So.
Okay, good morning, everybody.
Go ahead.
Where are you going, Bob?
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Coffee break.
All right, so we are scheduled with the locations and the dates for the public meetings. First one coming up, May 1st at the Laurel Fire Hall, second, May 2nd, Chair Center in Georgetown, the next one in Frankfurt Fire Hall. So we have three clustered in the same week, back to back. Then the following week, we'll be out at Milford at the Senior Center on the 10th, and ending at Beacon Middle School on the 16th. So we've gone out, we visited all the sites, we have arrangements made for the setup. In terms of the agenda for the meetings, folks will be arriving around 5 o'clock, so from 5 to 5:30 we'll have, you know, people signing in. They can talk to any member of the planning team, any county staff. If any of you will be there, they may come search you and get your ear as well. Around 5:30 we're going to ask people to have a seat and we'll do a brief presentation, no more than a half hour, I believe, which we'll talk about a little bit later today. And then we'll have plenty of time for questions and discussion. So we'll really open up the floor and let folks have a chance to ask questions about the process or voice their concerns in the same, you know, forum we have here, where they can speak any issues that they'd like considered in the comp plan. Depending on the location, depending on how much question and answer there is, if time permits, then people can go back to the boards for the open house and chat one-on-one with people as well. If not, we'll use the full time for the question and answer. We do have to be out of all the sites by 8 o'clock, so we really need to keep on schedule to make sure that we are done by 7:30 so we have time to tear down and get out of the building so they can lock up. So like I said, we went out and we looked at all the facilities, and we plan to have boards around the outside, and I'll go over what those are going to be in a few minutes. We'll have a registration table. In the middle, we're setting up chairs theater style toward a screen with a presentation and a podium, and there's sound systems, so there's microphones at all the sites for both the presentation and for the public to ask questions and answers. So are there any questions about the actual facilities themselves before I move on? Any of the locations, or there's plenty of parking, everything's ADA accessible. What else, Janelle, anything?
We're also going to have, you know, if people aren't comfortable speaking in the public, we're going to have a set of computers there, yep. So they can go right onto the website and leave comments. We're also going to have the
written
public
comment
the public comment form that
you guys have seen before.
Is in the back at all the meetings, so they can leave comments multiple ways. If they're not comfortable with talking in the public,
yeah. And I'll talk about some of the materials now.
Will a stenographer be available?
These aren't hearings. These are.
We weren't planning on it. We are planning on recording at least parts, a couple of the presentations, so we can put at least the presentation on the website, so people can be there. Again, staff's always taking diligent notes, so we can always have those comments. So we know what the questions are.
Quite good at that. I was just thinking if someone was handicapped and couldn't use some of the technology or whatever, but what we could do perhaps is make sure if someone is handicapped that we get back up with them at a later date, you know, if they want to leave a comment, rather than having a stenographer, from the cost of having a stenographer there to take a verbal comment or something.
Oh, yeah, they can leave comments anytime on the comment forms or through the website. Like,
what if they are handicapped?
Oh, at the meeting itself?
I think there's definitely, we'll always be willing to work with them.
At the meeting, and there'll be a translator there as well.
And then, yes, of course, we'll have somebody there to help us translate into Spanish if we need that, mm-hmm. So he'll be at all five meetings as well.
And we're discussing having Chip or someone from the county be almost like an MC for the presentation in the meeting.
We got a great guy right here. He does it all.
We talked to Bob. He's not able to come to all the meetings.
Every 2 years, I have to get recertified on my reserve analyst software, and that happens the first 3 days of May every 2 years. And I'm just not going to be here for Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, first, second, third. I'm happy to do it Wednesday, the 10th, and the 16th.
Okay.
I don't care. Well, as you were speaking, I was putting the meeting dates in my calendar for the 10th and the 16th. So. So actually, I think it would be a good idea, no matter who it is.
Chip
would do a great job.
We have, need a moderator to, you know, keep things moving along.
Sure.
And so people understand we're not kicking them out. Like at 7, we literally have to be out of these facilities. Like, we only have a set amount of time that we can be there. We'd love to have comment go till midnight, but we just can't just because of the sites. And people
I'd love to see Chip Guy doing the dance. That would be working. It'll be fun. Yeah.
So, okay. So I'll talk about our plan for some of the materials. So when people check in, register, they can, you know, sign in. So we have their contact information. They'll be given a handout, which just explains, you know, the agenda, that there'll be a presentation at 5:30. So they're aware that, you know, to start having a seat around 5:30. And just a brief description of the different boards that are around the room in case they don't have time to make their way around to see the different maps and the boards. I'm going to skip the second thing for just a second. The last thing is the fact sheet that was given at the public meeting, the first round of public meetings. It's just a general fact sheet, explains what a comp plan is, that the county's in the process of working on the comp plan by June of 2018. It's looking out to 2045, et cetera, et cetera, and that it looks at different elements. So just a handout to, for people who aren't familiar at all with what a comp plan is.
And
all
can,
right.
Can that include maybe a brief description of the difference between the comp plan and ordinance?
Sure.
Because
I know we've talked about it in our meetings, but like what's, and it'll be in the presentation too, zoning versus future land use. Like, is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, the comp plan is guidance, and
right.
the ordinance is implementation.
Okay.
And we often cross those lines here. We do it frequently because we're changing guidance for a reason, and that's to change ordinance. But it's important that the public understands that it's a two-step process and. The comp plan is not ordinance, and I don't know how you want to.
That's a good point. Well, definitely. I know we say on the fact sheet that it's a policy guidance document, but taking it one step further.
Saying what ordinance does to complement.
Exactly.
Complement.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that last thing I said is the fact sheet for people who aren't familiar with the comp plan. All right. So the second item actually is a great segue from the gentleman who spoke last. One thing that we really want to get out of this meeting is to start. Getting feedback from the public on future land use, so that it'll help guide our discussions in the spring and the summer when we dig back in with this group here. So what we're proposing on doing, and I have a rough draft that we can talk about today, I'll hand out. Sorry. This is a rough draft, so don't nitpick it too much. We're gonna be working on this. Today and through next week, but I want to get your feedback on the idea of what we're trying to do here. So what this is, and I can pull it up on the screen too, so the
if you could
see.
Put it on the screen,
yeah,
I
I'll
think these
right
folks
now.
Are interested in seeing it.
Yep.
So.
Okay.
Need another one.
Okay. Okay. All right. So yeah, this is rough. Like I said, there's some things we're changing. Obviously, some of the town names are getting cut off in the south, east corner, little things like that. Please don't nitpick on these things. We're working on it. But
you want one?
Here, I think we have a couple
there,
spare.
Actually, there's one that says draft on it.
Yeah, actually, let's give him one that says
is
draft.
Is yours?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, he can have this one.
Yeah, well,
it's
the same.
He's going to get this one.
Okay. All right. This is just for discussion today.
Yeah. Okay. So what we'd like to do is have members of the public look at a map of the county to see what land is currently developed, so that's what's in red, and then in green what land is protected. And per the conversations we've been having with this commission at the March 29th meeting and a little bit previously, we want to see what the public's vision is for growth. And like the gentleman who just spoke, he talked about some areas where he thinks growth may be happening. We want to get that from the public as well. So we'll be using, we'll be handing out markers. I have some here. Some nice highlighters here. And we're proposing using yellow and have people draw on the map areas where they envision low density development happening. And then using orange to depict areas where they could see medium to high density. Development. So that's the intention, and then there's a space at the bottom where they can describe their vision, where they say, yes, we see growth happening along the Route 1 corridor, so let's plan for that. Let's make sure the future land use plan lines up with that vision for growth. Or they may write on there, we don't want to see any growth. Or they may say, you know, keep it out of the East. Who knows? So we're going to, you know, hand this out, have people give us their feedback. And then when we come back for our next future land use discussion with this group, we'll be able to summarize what we heard from the public.
Now, when this is presented, when the public is presented with this opportunity, I'm hoping that it's going to be, that there's going to be some explanation prior to asking them to undertake this exercise.
Sure.
Of what low density means, what high density means, what medium, you know, what happens with them. Because among those who don't do this every day, if they're thinking they don't want much development, then that must mean low density. Well, low density is sprawl. I mean, low density is spreads people out. That's what folks are saying they don't want. So, or some folks are saying they don't want. Some folks are saying they don't want anything, and that's they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to, you know, and that voice will be heard. And then there are going to be some who are less concerned about it. But I just want to make sure that there's some explanation, some information given before this is just handed to them and say, here, do this exercise.
Yeah. I believe this one, it's going to have a separate board, a separate location,
yeah.
If I'm not
we'll
mistaken.
We'll have a table and someone there,
from
the county explaining.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And it'll be talked about, like, we only have a half hour for the first part of the open house, so people will be taking these. They may not have a lot of time to think about
yeah.
that, but then during
right.
the presentation we'll revisit this and say, you all took a copy of this handout. You know, please take the time before you leave tonight to, you know, take some time and think about it, and to, you know, explain through the PowerPoint what we hope to get from the public on this handout, if they don't have time to do it in that first half hour.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
I'm
to your point,
if there should be an attachment to the handout. That
okay. Well, that's why I want to talk to this group today. Yeah, do you want definitions? As I mean, we have this table from the 2008 plan that breaks out low and high density. Do you want to put some general ideas of what that means in terms of numbers of dwelling units per acre?
I'd like to hear from some of the other commissioners
yeah.
on this. Mr. Ross, you want to?
If you don't mind,
chime in on
thank
this?
You. A couple concerns.
Sure.
You know, one, if you ask people to say, but where do you want development, I think an inclination is to say, well, not where I live, somewhere else. And so I worry about whether we're going to get any objective or useful information out of an exercise like that. The other thing is what we're going to grapple with at the end of the day is this density question. It's a big question, and that's why the population numbers are so important, because we're going to have to need to know how much we need to expand different growth areas in order to accommodate the anticipated growth plus a margin of error. So if I'm just, you say you have some numbers, that's fine. Just use a number of change. But I'm saying 50,000 people in the next 10 years and 150 in 30.
Sorry, go ahead. I'll let you finish, but I just thought of something.
Go ahead.
Can we talk about this population number like
about that
right now?
Okay,
I mean,
why don't we do
keep
that?
We keep saying how
want,
important
I mean,
it is,
you,
and
we can come
and,
back
and
to
you
your
keep
point.
And you're telling us you've got
I have
information.
I have information. I can run by you.
Well, they're
going
to change,
like,
though. I mean, we're going to have whatever they are, and we do need to discuss it. But let me follow through.
Good, finish your thought.
And then
sorry.
We'll apply whatever numbers you want
right.
to the concept. But so you have to do a mathematical formula to say, okay, well, we need so many residences, whatever they are, in the next 10 years. And then we have to say, okay, at 2.5 people, you know, divide that. That's the number of residents. Then we say, okay, if it's 1 unit per acre, if I do the 2.5 and use 50,000, I need 20,000 acres. Okay. So instead of having a yellow orange thing, what I would propose, whatever that number is, whatever we arrive at the population and we divide it by the 2.5, that we have some way that we have either circles that are larger that says, you know, if you do this at 1 unit per acre, this circle represents 200 or 300 or 500
yeah.
homes.
Right.
And then we have another circle that says if you do this at 1.5 units per acre, which is about what we're averaging now, give or take, this is a smaller circle. This is how many represents a number of homes. And then 2 units, 3 units, 4 units. And then we divide that by the total acreage, just say that you need Each one represents the same number of homes, it just takes less area, okay?
We've done that before with like chips.
Yep.
But with
whatever.
This, yeah, a chip map. Okay. We've done that before, but with the format of this meeting, making sure we have enough time for the public to give comment, we didn't have time for a chip map exercise.
Well,
but we
I
can
think
maybe
that's the only way that we're going to get useful information, because it forces people to realize the connectivity between how much land you're going to use, how much infrastructure is going to be required, right? And it's a trade-off. It's not. Now, you may use a combination. I mean, you could say, well, you have to use 50 chips, right? Any combination. You can all use all big ones. You can all use all small ones. You can use any combination of chips that you want. But you have to use 50 chips, because that's how much land we're going to need in the 10 years. And you can put them any place you want, except you can't put them on top of a red dot, because that's already developed, right? So you got to put it outside of a red area because it's developed. And I think this way we do two things. And I'm not going to hold you off too much longer. This way we do two things. Number one, we educate the public that it's a trade-off, right? And number two, we actually force a decision of mass. They have to be thinking, connecting the dot of how much land we're going to use and how much our infrastructure cost is going to be. And there's no wrong answer. There's no right answer either, you know, but it starts to educate the public of the decision that's going to be the tough decision for not just us, but for the council as we expand these growth areas. And sorry, sir, go ahead.
I was just going to react to your idea. As Alexis was saying, we've done that. I think what Alexis is worried about is engaging each member of the public in that exercise.
And just real quick, for the record, we need your introduce yourself.
Actually, I beg your pardon. I should have asked you at the beginning of the meeting. We're all wondering who you are and how you came to be here.
I recognize some of you from the early presentations. My name is Bert Kosselman. I'm a planner and vice president with McCormick Taylor.
Okay.
And I work with the team in sort of an advisory role.
Cool. All right, go ahead.
So I just wanted to react to that idea. As Alexis was saying, we have done that exercise with chips showing different how much land gets used up with different densities for residential. And I think Alexis was worried about if every person participated in this land use chip map exercise or density exercise, it would take up a lot of time. But what I think we can do, if it's of interest to you, is go through some theoretical exercises showing different, we call them scenarios or different alternatives.
We've talked about scenarios at a high level.
That would show if you put all the, you know, if you're going to accommodate all of the people, which, you could debate, I guess, at different densities, you will show how much land is used up with different densities. We could do that in sort of illustrative fashion and get some response to it. I don't know that I agree with Alexis. We probably don't have time to let each person present their own scenario.
That's why we're trying to capture it on a handout that they can do their turn in before the end of the meeting.
Yeah, I just don't like crayons and because it's just so easy to just say not in my backyard.
Exactly.
But when you're putting dots on a map, you can't avoid your backyard. Or virtually, because you're piling them all into someone else's. I think we need to make an attempt to do that to whatever degree we can. And I think we need to understand that the workshops don't necessarily have to be the end-all beginning and the end of time. If people don't get the opportunity but still want to play the game, you know, we can set up some place here in the building to say, stop by the office and here's a board and we'll take a photo of it and put it in our image file. You can use the same board multiple times, and people don't have to sign them. We don't need to know who they are. But I think it's important. I mean, one thing I complained about in the original workshops is we missed an educational opportunity. And I don't want to miss it a second time. And I think this is too important, because people really have to connect the difficult decision that we can't tell people they can't live in Sussex County. Okay? Who in here wants to be told you can't live here, right? Okay, so we can't tell them that. So these people want to live here, and we can't put a roadblock up. So this decision of density, whether it's building height or affordable housing, these all are interconnected to the density and the land use. And down the road, we're going to be talking about conservation, and we're going to have to find and figure a way to how do we link the residential density to land preservation. So this is complicated, but it's a process. So I think we need to make that attempt. I think we need to make it a live attempt so that it doesn't end at the workshops.
What about stickers? I think Janelle brought that up.
Whatever.
So maybe it's a hybrid. We keep the yellow and orange, but maybe smaller stickers going, okay, each sticker represents so many houses.
Absolutely.
You get so many.
But, mm-hmm. but they need to be sized.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
smaller for, you know.
And a bigger map.
The bigger map might be a little bit more difficult for somebody to use individually. But if we can get larger stickers, go, okay, you know, the big yellow sticker represents 100 houses. The little orange sticker represents 100 houses. Where should they go? So
on
it's a hybrid.
Now, I mean, it's,
no,
it's you're going to have a pinpoint.
Could we have five of these for five different areas? Or there's, 60, 70% of the homes are
east of 113.
We could have it plotted out, but people would be putting stickers on top of each other.
Well, you can't. That's the thing. You can't do that.
Yeah,
because
and we can't hand out
spatial.
A plot to everybody.
Yeah.
So.
Well, no, you can. Post-its are pulled off and put on. Anyhow, you understand the concept. I'm not going to try to solve the issue. That's
we'll come up with a concept that works because we also want to make sure that people have, when they're listening to a presentation, they can do this at the same time. So, we'll come up with a hybrid solution.
Do you? I'm sorry, Janelle.
Oh, go ahead.
But you all have a concept that you were trying to, that you were alluding to that you've done in the past where you say, here are some scenarios. If we took this area, you know, like you know, the Henlopen TID, that's been a big one that we've been talking about recently. So if you take the Henlopen TID and, isn't that right, TID, transportation?
Yep.
The 17 square miles or whatever, times, what is it, 660 acres to the square mile, whatever. So we have this many acres, and if we, X percent's been built out, so we have this many left acres. If we do them, currently 1.8 or 2 to the acre, whatever it is, it would, there would be this many homes, and if we did it 4 to the acre, 6 to the acre, something to help people understand. I mean, it's like nobody, everybody, feels like everybody. A big problem is being able to get up and down on the roads. Mm-hmm. And the feeling, as I've been here, the few months that I've been here, people's solution to the problem, it's understandable because, they don't want to increase anything over, 2 to the acre because it's just going to put more cars on the road. So you have to pull yourself away from that argument just long enough to look clearly and objectively at, what's going to happen over the next 20, 30 years if we just sprawl all out as opposed to, put more on an acre. And then, at the end of the day, we might say, yeah, that would work better. I mean, that would be more prudent and wise over the long haul. But in the next 30 years or, if the state or a private sector doesn't come build some more roads, it's just going to be very painful. So then you have to make a choice, are we going to try to do something that's prudent, for 20 years down the road for our, children or grandchildren, or are we just going to try to sprawl it out and slow it down? And I think the public needs to be able to really understand that and make a decision. It concerns me when I hear people, come to draw a conclusion just based on the fact that they can't get up and down on the roads, but they don't really understand. There are negatives, but there are certainly benefits to density and be really informed. I think maybe that's what Marty was talking about, missing the opportunity or whatever, but we have more opportunities. So instead of just giving them, a piece of paper and a couple of crayons or whatever they are, maybe we want to use this time to try to explain, hey, there's two sides of this, and it's an open debate.
That's part of the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, suggesting earlier.
Yeah.
There definitely needs to be some explanation, some that goes with whatever this exercise takes place. But
yeah, this station would definitely be staffed by myself, Alexis, or somebody else who's got who can very easily explain what we're trying to get out of this and what the impact could be and explain some of those answers.
Well, I would certainly like you to take Mr. Ross's comments and concerns under advisement and maybe try to refine this a little bit and come up with something that might be a little more you know, representative of how it's really, how it really happens. So if we could.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough?
Go ahead.
Mr. Ross, I think you just crawled inside my head for a minute.
That bothers me a little bit. You just poked my mind out there.
Get used to it. He's been crawling inside of mine for 10 years.
That may not be a good thing, Bob.
On the top of the sheet here, it says, where would you like to see future development occur?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how you're going to get one piece of objective feedback from that, because nobody is going to draw a circle around their area and their, you know, where they live.
You know, that's true. But let me just you touched on something that's important. The purpose is not so much objectivity as it is to know where people are and what they're thinking, what their thoughts are. Certainly, everybody's going to do this exercise in the manner that appeals to them. So, to the extent that you know it's going to be fairly subjective, I would think. But that doesn't mean that it isn't useful information. It is good to know how a lot of the public is thinking, because that's who we're doing this plan for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's the process that you know, and that's what we're trying to do. What I think we're concerned about is that we want it to be a thoughtful, informed opinion that we're getting. We want folks to be informed, and then we would like them to opine after that. But we would like them to be informed. Okay,
that's the second time somebody's been in my head. My follow up to that was
we're having a party there later. We're all invited.
I hope we use this information properly. You know, when you sit down and go over this and decipher all this, that's exactly my point. And I think it's good information, but you got to really be careful how you go through this and do it.
It occurred to me that so we're having five meetings in the five districts. So on this map, the meeting that's here is going to be here, here's here,
exactly
here's here.
Gonna,
you know, yeah.
Well,
maybe, you know, I don't know, you average it. I don't know. But, yeah.
Well, that's just, is it going to be representative of the county?
Let's see what we get.
We're going to have 500 people at this meeting, and we'll have 10 at this one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
You guys are smart. You get the idea.
Yeah,
figure it out.
We'll come up with a hybrid to make sure it's representative.
Yep. Figured out.
Okay.
Figured out, and we'll tell you whether or not you got it right.
I'm currently unemployed,
you know, that's
so
how it works.
Don't ask me.
Okay. Carry on.
All right. So we're going to have other boards around the room as well. This is a tentative board I wanted to put out there.
Okay, we're good. Go ahead.
We okay?
Yeah,
right.
We're good. Go ahead.
I know, Marty, you had brought this up before about just having something on a board with, and we're proposing just having each chapter and bullet points saying what's in each chapter. For somebody who doesn't know what's in the utilities chapter, they'll say, okay, it covers water, supply, wastewater, energy, telecommunications, stormwater, and waste. So they know, just looking at it, okay, that's what this chapter is, without having to open the plan, okay? All right, so to Vince's point, we also want to show that we've been doing all this work through these workshops on some of the elements. So in terms of goals, objective strategies, I know we've gone through those with you on PowerPoints, but we will put people to sleep if we try to do that on a PowerPoint. So we're proposing putting those on boards and having people, you know, they can use their comment forms or talk to people about their comments on the goals, objectives, and strategies for the chapters that we've done so far. With a disclaimer on the land use, we also talked about this internally, but with land use, because we've only touched upon that, we did talk about some of the goals and objectives and a few strategies. We can show those with the disclaimer they may change as we dig back into land use through the spring and the summer through future workshops.
I think it should be a disclaimer on all of it.
Okay.
Frank, and I don't think we should get too far into the future land use. I think we should wait to the workshops get done, and we're going to refine that. We'll probably visit that again two or three times.
Do you want me to show the future, the goals, objectives that we've talked about so far,
or just show the ones that we've done?
Well, I will tell you, just so you know, like when we talked about it, we didn't, back to your point, we didn't want to missed the opportunity to get information on it. That was the thing.
But we stopped midstream. I think one of Mr. Hudson came up here and talked about it. Well, we stopped with the municipalities, not because we weren't going to go beyond that.
Right.
I'm on both sides of it. I'm on a seesaw. You know, I don't want to confuse the public, but I don't want to deny them information either. So I don't know. I mean, we'll have
other thoughts.
You can decide, but I think somebody has to understand that was our very first discussion of future land use, and it was really beyond preliminary. It was preliminary.
Yeah, that's why I was hesitant on what to do with this.
Well, that's why we're going to put the disclaimer on.
A really big footnote says very initial preliminary.
Yeah. This will change, okay?
And honestly, with the future land use goals and objectives, I found that there's still a lot of holes there for strategies that we'll need to come back and revisit. So I may not even put the strategies at this point, or some of the goals and objectives don't have strategies yet, which we'll come back to this spring and this summer. Do you want me to show those strategies or just show the goals and objectives?
I mean, if you're going to show it, why would, and I don't have an answer to this. This really is a question, but why would you not just put it all out
there?
If we're going to qualify it, this is total draft and it could all change.
Well, then we'll put it all out just with the disclaimer that the spring and the summer we'll be doing future workshops to dig in further.
That it was like based on a very initial discussion.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
And same with the other, I think, Marty, you're saying with the other elements you want a disclaimer on everything, saying...
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, you know, this is drafting phase, so people have to expect changes.
Sure.
And the public would appreciate that as well, I would think, because if they see something in there that they think they're concerned about, they can let us know.
They can let us know now.
Yeah.
Right.
Get it.
Okay, great. So we'll have those as well on boards. We'll have some of the maps that we've talked about before, the existing land use, this map, the developed and protected lands, the map that shows all the building permits and the applications, a map showing some of the constraints like wetlands and
stuff. Can we stop there just for a second? Where do you get the constraints map information from?
It's wetlands and steep slopes and floodplains.
In my broad experience in the state, I've served on so many committees, I can't remember them all, but one of them was the wetlands committee. It was like 3 years ago, so it's fairly recent. And the Denmark wetlands maps are just simply wrong. I don't know what other way to state it. I mean, if it had a tree on it, I think it got colored in mostly as wetlands. And when you go out there and do a delineation, it's probably terribly wrong.
Well, so there is a wetlands map in the 2008 plan.
It is, but what I'm saying is it's probably terribly wrong, okay? Because I've done infield delineation. I don't do them, but I hire people to do them, and they're terribly, terribly wrong. And so I'm just concerned about providing misinformation on the constraints.
We don't have to have that map.
And then steep slopes, maybe we have a few.
There's very few.
I think those slopes are the mound system in that person's backyard. But nevertheless,
probably a mound system.
The floodplains are fine. I mean, those are fine to put out there. I mean, we do have building of floodplains and rules about that, but I mean, those are fine. So I'm just concerned about, you know, providing information that isn't really vetted.
Well, I mean, we'll need to talk about it when we get to the conservation element, because that is a map in your...
I know, don't have steep slopes,
but you do have
floodplains. We're going to be talking about it when we get to that.
Lots of floodplains.
As far as the constraints map, I think right now we best leave it
all. All right, that's fine. Okay. Okay, the alternatives. So those are the four alternatives we've been discussing before, which we'll refine a little bit more per discussion today, and then a map of the transportation network in the DLDOT improvements, which you've also seen before, and that'll be so Josh has a station where people can go right to him and talk about transportation. We'll put that, give him lots of space. So that's the idea with the boards. Then there's also smaller boards. So if you remember at the workshops in October, I believe two of you weren't members of the Planning Commission at that point, but we did have faces of all the Planning and Zoning Commission members in the County Council on a welcome board. So that's up to debate if you want to be on a welcome board again. That was right at the entrance.
Did darts come included? Darts included. Cool. Yeah.
If you don't want that, you'll definitely have name tags if you so choose.
Yeah, everybody will have a name tag as well.
It doesn't matter. Everybody's got my cell phone, so might as well put that out there, too.
Just the name tags are the size of manhole covers. You know?
Yeah. Does my wife get one?
Okay. And then we have the same board we used before at the first public meeting, round of public meetings, just that people respect others' opinions and, you know, don't shout over each other, et cetera, just some ground rules for the meeting. A next step board, which shows the Twitter, the Facebook page, the website, you know, how to submit comments through the website. And then we looked at all of the facilities I mentioned, so we do have some wayfinding signage.
These rooms are bigger generally than the ones we used last time,
yes,
right?
Yes, they are.
Because I'm thinking this is a lot of visual clutter potentially,
yes.
So.
Yeah.
They all will hold over 100 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Easily.
Yeah, that's good. They varied in size last time, but yeah.
Yeah, we're setting up, I think, all of them for 100 seats.
Okay.
And I think Lewis, we have
this
even
time
more.
Around.
Yeah, even more.
Yeah, they were, because I was just thinking with all these, it's more signs and you just need more room. So mm-hmm. I thought that was the case. Great.
We purposely chose larger venues.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Okay, so the presentation. We don't want to go more than a half hour because we tend to lose people, so we want to keep it maybe around 20 minutes to a half hour. A lot of people who may come to this meeting may not have been attending these workshops or any of the workshops in the fall, so there'll be some slides on, you know, what's a comp plan, what's its purpose, what Marty said with the implementing it through ordinances, then a quick summary of what we've heard so far up to this point through public feedback, which I think I presented at a November workshop with this group in County Council, you know, how many comments were received at the first round of public workshops, all the different methods for receiving public feedback up to this point, and then how that shaped those six themes that we've talked about, and then how that shaped the vision statement. We'll present that as well. And then we'll do some, you know, trends, the demographics, the building permit trends, which you've all seen before as well. Then a discussion about future land use. So what is that element? You know, what does it mean to Sussex County? We've talked about that. How shaping future land use. So I think we're going to circle back with Janelle and talk about the scenarios and that exercise.
Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but right there is a good opportunity to get away from the oval pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys do do some low density and high density with the same thing that you talked about.
Uh-huh.
Do it on the computer and say, hey, this is a future land use scenario using low density.
Yep.
And this is the same scenario using high density, just to give the public a view.
Yep. Yep.
You know, or two or three, just have a little fun with it.
Yep.
You know, there's no right or wrong. But again, I'm very concerned about this because this is the foundation of our future land use and our growth mm-hmm. areas is understanding the importance of the density discussion
mm-hmm.
because it's so interconnected
yep.
to everything else. And so this is a good opportunity, again, to educate that, you know, when you pull one end of the rope, that other end's going to move.
Yep. Okay. So we'll talk about the future land use scenarios. We'll explain the exercise and make sure folks, you know, take the time to complete the exercise before they leave, or we'll put information they can mail it back if they want or drop it off at the office.
So when you do a scenario like that, do you paint 100% or do you pick like, okay, we're going to pick 50% of the area and so that there's open space? Because if you present it, you just show you carpet bomb in 100% of the area, and people mm-hmm. are going to, you know, they're going to say, well, we definitely don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had two scenarios where you said we can bring this many new homes in mm-hmm. to X percent, you know, maybe it's 60%, I don't know, but always use that same one and say, you know, because that's one of the, that's the other concern is open space.
Right.
You know, so if you take an area and, you know, half of that, we're going to go at 2 to the acre or 4 or 6,
mm-hmm.
then you can, you know, then, No, I guess the open space area keeps getting bigger, doesn't it? Is that how you've done it in the past, or how do you give the deliver the presentation so people walk away saying, oh wow, you know, didn't look at it like that before?
Right. Thank you. There are a lot of ways to present it, slice it and dice it, if you will. So there are two big variables for this discussion: density, depending on zoning, and location. And I think what we'll work through with your staff is how do we present these scenarios so we are educating and engaging the public in both the density concept and the location concept. So we'll work through that to be able to address both.
And what we've talked about before, previous workshops focus more on location. So those were those maps I showed, you know, saying, do we want to focus location around the towns and their annexation areas? Do we want to focus development on the east because that's where the trend is with the building permits and the development? Do we want to focus location of development on some of the main corridors? So second point is tackling density on top of that.
So therein lies, I guess, I don't know if you refer to it, a principal question, and that is, can we as a government help the developers understand that there's a better place to develop, or are the people, you know, or informed the public, or is the, do we need to follow where the sales are and come to the conclusion, doggone, there's this many, you know, new permits that are going in this particular area right here, and we're not, we really, you know, are these four or five or six major areas, and we really can't control that. Because I think that I guess is another, is that right? That's kind of a fundamental debate, whether we can control, where we can like point people, like, you know,
well, you can give incentives.
Bridgeville or Greenwood.
Yeah, you can incentivize. You can regulate, but regulate's a, you know.
Can I ask a question? This is a total planning question, and I'm asking because I don't know the answer to. So I want to be clear, I'm not advocating one side or the other. I just, the math of it, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on it. We're kind of looking at density and growth in a straight line by the numbers method. But my question is, doesn't economics and personal preference play in that, or does it? Because if we're just looking at numbers, you could say, well, those numbers are based upon the market bearing out the type of home product that we have in Sussex County now, you know. And so if we say, well, it's just strictly numbers and we go to high density, the market may not support higher density purchases for people moving to Sussex County, so the numbers would drop. Is it a straight line number, or is there economics and prep? You know, I don't want us to get so focused on numbers that we lose sight of sort of reality, maybe. Is that a realistic concern or not?
Preference in demographics. People may not have the income to live in Rehoboth, so they may have to look at home values that are cheaper maybe somewhere else and face a longer commute or whatever it may be. They may not, as in terms of preference, they may not want multifamily, they may not want to live in like condos, right, versus a single family home on, you know, 2 more acres.
Because I guess I'm just sitting here thinking through it, and that's a question for the commission, but we often say, you know, I agree with this 100%, it's hard for the county to dictate where people are going to live. Like to Mr. Ross's comment, we can't tell people we can't come live in Sussex County any more than we can say, well, you know, we can't keep you from coming to Eastern Sussex County, or vice versa, you can come to Sussex County, but you can only go to Western Sussex County. It seems to me we also, and this is the question that I have that I'm struggling with, we can't tell people that you have to live in high density, you know, because the numbers bear that out. You know, it just seems like if we get stuck on just strictly numbers, then we're losing sight of, you know,
but what we do is, you know, we don't do that. I mean, obviously we don't tell people what density they have to live in, but what we have done is we've capped. We've told people you can't live in high density because we've capped density.
Yeah.
And so what the debate is, you know, should we open that cap or raise that cap, whether it's through building heights or whatever, so that, you know, we don't force them to live in high density, but we give the developer and the home buyer the choice. And the developer's going to build to the home buyer's demand. If the home buyer says, yeah, you know, hey, I'll live in that density because I like neighbors, I like a neighborhood, I like a short distance to walk, and so they choose. That's what's driving development now. It's not governance. The only thing governance is doing in the county is capping. We're just saying, no, you can't build any more than this, for either spatially because of whatever open space plus heights, or just through sheer density limitations. You can't build over this many. So what we're talking about is not telling people what density they have to be in. We're just enabling them to choose a higher density if they want to.
Yeah, my comments pretty much is it potentially opens up more options.
It does.
So it doesn't limit you to two units to an acre or something. It gives you more flexibility potentially and more options. So if you want to choose that higher density, you potentially have that ability to do that, where it, maybe it's a little less difficult to do that, where then you're just forced to do the same thing over and over again. So really, this is kind of helping to recognize that there's more potentially more options, more flexibility. So, you know, you definitely can develop in the manner you want, but maybe there's different options.
And, you know, this is getting into conservation a little bit, but the danger is that if you don't tie that extra density to natural resource preservation, then the only thing you've done is you've just added a lot more people in your county without any spatial constraints. So, you know, that's why that natural resource preservation component is a big component, and we're going to have to get through that. But if we're willing to get over the hurdle of density and tie it to natural resource preservation, then we can win.
Well, we also have to tie it to transportation. I mean, yeah, that's the thing that everybody's upset about. I heard, you know, last night, no, we don't want to have neighborhoods tied to each other anymore because people don't want to drive through somebody else driving through their neighborhood. But if we keep putting homes in with no way to get from point A to point B, we're just creating more problems. You know, so we've got everything's got to be tied together here. You can't just say, well, we want it for environment, we want it for this. So.
Yeah, we have some illustrations that we can use, and I think it's very helpful with the public. For example, population of 1,000 is 400 units, almost independent of density. 400 dwelling units is 4,000 vehicle trips, and it doesn't take long for the math to add up
right. That
you can't accommodate, you know, an endless number of vehicle trips. It's a pretty direct, it's a direct calculation. Population to dwelling units to trips.
Right. That's one of the things that people, I would like to make sure everybody understands when they do this.
You know, what is the answer? In other words, are you saying that maybe there needs to be some kind of like a moratorium or?
I'm not saying moratorium at all. But I am saying that we need to be, you know, thinking that okay, if we want a higher density, we also need to make sure there's adequate roads and that there's ways for people to get from point A to point B. So, again, we can't control DLDOT, but we can make sure that we've left
privatize
enough.
We can do something.
Privatize, you know, yes.
Because you can't, I'm just trying to make sure I understand what you're saying, you know, because it's like you can't steer a ship that's not moving. So, it's, you know, and we definitely don't want to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg because, I mean, history repeats itself. And sometime in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, we're going to have another downturn. The country's going to have another slowdown. And it'd be nice if Sussex County is one place that continues to thrive.
We thought ahead on this,
you know, through that. I'm with you. I mean, I'm showing my naivety just being so new at this, but based on history, it sounds like, you know, getting the mobility thing fixed, maybe we should look into privatizing it.
Well, the mobility discussion will be coming up at the next workshop in May, so.
Yeah.
A bulletproof vest provided or?
All right, so we hear everything that you're all saying. Then the end of the presentation, we'll explain the chapter work that's been taking place, direct people to the boards to see the goals and objectives, explain these workshops, that people have an opportunity to come and speak at the workshops and that they have an opportunity at any time to come to any of the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings and voice public comment on the comp plan, explain the rest of the schedule, and then other opportunities for comment, like the workshops, the chapters being placed on the websites, the website over the spring and summer, the meetings in the fall, and everything else. So that's the plan, to try to get all that in a half-hour presentation.
We couldn't even do it ourselves.
Chip guy. He's got the whip. Chip will have the whip. Chairman here will have the bat in his hand, gavel.
All right. I don't think we can do Zorro leading us there.
Historic is next because
okay. Hans
will be here for about 25 more minutes.
Okay. Hold on a second. All right. Any other comments on the workshops? We have our charge to move ahead from today.
Yep.
I'd like to hear about the population numbers.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, we do need to talk about that. Can't believe you forgot.
Amen.
Okay, let's talk about that. All right. All right. Do you all like math?
Bring that.
I'll try to follow you through what I did.
I used to like math, but I like Excel better.
Yes, Excel does the math for you. Okay.
What the hell?
Yeah. All right. Try to follow along. All right. This is the number from the Delaware Population Consortium for the projected population for the year 2045. That is permanent residents, okay?
Yeah.
We've all talked about this number before.
Okay.
This is the 2015 current county population according to the census. They have their own crazy math for how they figure out population between censuses. So that gives you a net gain of about 46,500 people between now and 2045. Do I have you so far? Okay.
Yep. How many son?
All right.
30.
What's that?
That's
the 46?
That's 30 years.
Yeah, from 2015 to 2045. All right. Households. So according to the census, households are occupied housing units. So that's 81,000 households are occupied. Okay, out of 127,000 housing units. So of that 127,000, 81,000 are occupied full-time. 46,500 are considered vacant, according to the census. Now, that number includes seasonal, recreational, or occasional use. So these are the people that we're talking about. Those.
Can we break that number down?
Yes.
They consider those vacant.
Well, no, we can't break that down, but I can show you. What's that? What was that, Doug?
You consider those vacant.
They're considered vacant. The 46,000, that includes the seasonal. So now I took the seasonal out of that number because some of them are just vacant people, yeah. Like abandoned, whatever, or they're vacant because they haven't been sold yet or whatever it may be. Out of that 46,000, 37,500 are the recreational ones, okay?
Okay?
So there you go. All right, so then to project out how many residents are living in those potentially, you know, recreational homes when they're in town. It could be, I took the 2.52, the persons per household, you know, and I multiplied it by those recreational units. So essentially, you have currently about 94,500 people that are your recreational folks that are in the county when all those vacant units are filled for recreational purposes. So those, yeah, when
so
the seasonal homes are being filled.
Seasonal residents.
Yeah, you have about 94,000 seasonal residents right now.
Interesting.
Okay. So out of all of your total residents in the county, 30%, when you add those in, about 30% are your seasonal. So at your full population, when everybody's here, about 30% are seasonal people. Does that make sense so far?
But the 30% doesn't translate to the 215,622. It's on top of that, right?
Yeah, so it's the 94 so, plus this.
So it's 94, right. So yeah. It's 300,000,
right.
310,000.
Yep, it's 30%.
When everybody's here
and everybody's here all
Fourth
the time.
4th of July, it's 10, it's yeah. Okay, it's 310.
Someone's 30% in Rehoboth
30%
of
the total.
Of the 310, with everybody here.
50% of the 200.
Yeah.
15.
All right.
A 50% add-on to
so
the 250.
But seasonal residents are people that show up in May and leave in September, or are we talking weekly rentals?
We don't know that. We just know that those homes are classified as seasonal.
I thought about that, too, yep. And I think the right way to think about that is that the house is full all the time. It's not the same people all the time, but it's the same
it's
number of
out.
People all
yeah.
the time. Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't matter a whole lot. Although I would suggest to you that I would go with more than 2.5
yeah.
people for house.
Well, that's the census. That's the current.
Oh, I know. We get
yeah,
it.
That's
nobody's,
the current
no
census number
no,
for
no,
your
not,
your
know,
persons per house.
You're going scientifically.
I'm
going
scientific
with,
here.
We're
yeah.
going with what we know about
yeah.
Rehoboth on
and,
the 4th of July.
And I'll make a disclaimer too. This doesn't take into account if people have guests staying with them, like the full time residents who may have like people from out of town visiting. There's no way to capture that.
It doesn't count the hotels and every other thing that you have at the beach.
Right.
But
we're looking at those seasonal units.
Yeah, please don't take this as fine and fault with what you've done here. This is great.
Yeah.
Better than we've ever had.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no, we're just anecdotally, suggesting that there could be really more people than that. But based on the science, this is that we know about. This is what we've gotten. This is great. This is excellent information. So,
okay. So now that's just right now. So then I had to think about out to 2045. So what we do have is
that. Can I ask you a question? Because do you have any numbers on how many of that 30% or half, again, the 215,000, of that group, how many of those people, like in those houses, dwellings, in X number of years, five, six, do the people retire and end up becoming full-time residents? Because that's going to change. Because when you roll this thing out 30 years, that's going to take your 30%.
215 number, we can break that down by age. Based on the number of vacant and seasonal,
it doesn't break it
there's
out.
That's very.
It doesn't assign people to those vacant units.
It's just number of households, so it's very difficult to figure out
how many are turning over to full time.
Right. That's.
Yeah,
I don't think
we know currently how many seniors are here.
I mean, do you have an opinion? I've heard some people. I've heard that a percentage of those, like I don't know if it's 50%, 60%, 80% in 5 years that they become permanent.
I don't think it matters that much
because some of them stay and then some of them go. So we still have roughly about
turnover
that percentage of seasonal.
One group comes.
I mean, probably 60% of the people sitting in the audience right now. Lived here part-time for so many years and then decided to move here. Am I correct?
Somewhat, no.
Yeah.
She did the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Everybody
does. Do we have a count of how many residences there are? How many homes there are?
There's 127,000 units, 127,680 units. That's including those vacant and occupied currently.
And then if we audit the number that you have by saying, well, let's take the whatever units times 2.5, mm-hmm. does that come close to the number that you have here?
What do you mean whatever units times 2.5?
The number of residential units in the county.
That's
times the 2.52 or whatever it
that's
is.
That's how I got to this. Yeah. So
that's what you did
I took
there?
Those seasonal units times 2.52. to get about 94,500 residents.
Right. Okay,
gotcha.
She's backed out the
chain.
Same
I backed
way.
Out.
Yeah, you're gonna come
cool.
to pretty much
yeah.
the same place.
That's impressive that you.
All right, and then how do we? And then do we have a record of? I mean, how do we? We know we're issuing building permits at a rate. Now, I agree with Keller; it's going to go up and down. We've seen it go up and down, but there's an average, and I don't know that I agree with Mr. Collins that. For some reason it's going to decline dramatically to 400 units in 30 years. I would like to know why, if that's great. The case, what would cause that to happen?
Maybe
honestly
dying.
Think that yes. his yeah. information is based strictly on
the numbers,
population
yeah.
and
yeah.
death rates and so on. It
so,
really does.
So what I'm
those,
getting at is
the numbers he had, the Delaware Population mm-hmm. Consortium, are the numbers we're using in that demographic right. chapter, and it shows the population kind of leveling out in
yeah.
future. But that's out to 2045.
Okay.
And that's the numbers done by.
So if we come up with a number that is here today, this is what you've done.
Okay.
That's good. Excellent work. And then we say, well, we're going to average 2,000 units a year, right? You got to put in a fudge factor. So then you multiply that, and that would give us our projected number, right?
Well, let me show you how I projected out to 2045, and you can
okay.
tell me whether
sure.
you agree
no,
with
that's
it.
Cool.
All right. So I looked at the current mix in terms of percentage of occupied versus vacant housing units that are currently here. So about 64% of your existing housing units are occupied, and 36% are vacant. Keep in mind that 36% includes, abandoned homes, et cetera. So I came up with using this 46,000, my math was, yeah. So of the decade in population, 46,500, I divided by people per household, so that's assuming that there'll be 18,458,000 full-time occupied households. These are net. This is net gain of that 46,000. 18,000 are full-time. And then I looked at what's the additional number of vacant housing units, including the seasonal. And I used that 64-36% split to get that number.
Wow.
Okay. So then, that, but like I said, that includes the seasonal. So then I had to look of that 36%, what percent were the seasonal. And then that's how I brought it down to 8,471. So this includes the abandoned houses, houses that haven't been rented out yet, et cetera. This is the seasonal. And once again, this is the net gain between 2015 and 2045. Okay,
only
so we're...
Only 8,000.
Housing but, units, okay?
But that doesn't... I mean, in my internal math... My computer between my ears.
But that's just seasonal, right?
It's just
that's
the
not
seasonal.
The total number. So it's 8,000 of
here's
the
total number. 28,000 including everything. What you're assuming a 28,841 additional housing units.
In the 30-year period?
Yeah.
That just doesn't add up. I mean, we're issuing 2,000 plus
per year. I don't know, Marty. It kind of reflects what Rich was talking about, though, because if we reach an, it doesn't reflect what's happening today and for the next 5 years, but I'm wondering about, or the next 10 even, but that last 20-year period of that 2045, 2015 to 2045, I'm wondering if that's where you're getting the...
Well, what would cause
that?
Let
me find the, I don't know if I have it on today.
We're dying.
The sprawl.
Well, there's going to be a ton of conditional uses for funeral homes coming up.
Yeah, well, but,
no, I just,
now
I just.
Know what industry?
I mean, I don't know.
Should
I mean,
really
I'm just trying to come. I'm trying to find a way to make
I mean,
it make sense.
I just don't see. I personally don't see how that happens unless we change the way we run our county dramatically. Okay, because we're either going to have to raise taxes to a point where people no longer find us a place to live, you know, an attractive place to live, or not. But if we run 2,000 housing units, not 2,200, in a 10-year period, that's 20,000 right there in the 10 years.
Well, but you have to take into consideration, too, when people die and move, those existing units come back on the market. You know, so I mean,
that's happening today. We're still issuing. People are dying today, aren't they?
They're not dying as fast as they're.
My wife's praying every day. I'm like, catch a cold. She's like, is this the big one? Do I get the life insurance now or later?
There are plenty of folks. Kind of wishing all five of us.
Yeah.
But hopefully they don't have a direct line or a line.
Yeah. It's not a lifeline, that's for sure.
Yeah,
Alexa,
but I get where you're coming from, though. We want to make sure we're in the right.
And where I'm open, and I'm sure we can post this on the website. We'll get other people's opinions on this. But this is important that we don't undershoot. You know, in the growth areas, we're better off to have more availability than less because of the impact it has on the cost of housing and all that kind of thing. So I'm just worried that we're just extremely undershooting based on what we've seen from 1970 to present, and I don't see a compelling reason to say that's going to change. You know, even if people die and we don't dramatically change the way we govern the county, this is going to be an attractive place to move, whether they moved in Bridgeville or in Rehoboth.
People are dying everywhere, though. There's not going to be as many people moving in 20 or 30 years, I don't think, either. Mm-hmm.
The building permit number.
Maybe. Population study in the U.S.
But the 2,000 or 2,200 number, what does that represent? Because building permits mean a lot of things. I mean, that's residential, commercial, but it also means renovations and other things. Do we know what the true number of new construction?
We know what the new.
And maybe it is. I don't know, but I just want to make sure
we hold that out. We did that using certificates of occupancy.
Yeah. Is the 2,200 number the certificates of the COs, or is that the total number of buildings?
I think it's 2016 CO number, but. You know, that doesn't reflect the 10-year period.
It does, but we've seen it ebb and flow.
Yeah.
We don't always hit 2,200. Right. It might be a couple more. It might be
less.
But again,
so I think what she's done is kind of figured an average
based on
the information we had. So, you know, we might be a little under, we might be a little over, but it's a statistical number that we can back up.
Right.
And, you know, with science behind it. So we can, and it's based on the average information that we have.
Well, you know, we've gotten to a place, this is a good start, and let's see if we can't post this on our website so everybody can look at it and comment and chew it to death, and then we'll see where it ends up. We don't have to decide today, you know.
Yeah, and can we get a copy of that?
The you want me to clean this up somehow, or do you want the raw spreadsheet?
I mean,
I can clean it up with just the important stuff.
No, I mean, I'd like to have just. I mean, if you want to clean up, that's fine. But can I have that version?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take the clean one too.
That's really because it's really helpful.
It is.
Yeah.
So just the takeaway. The takeaway is that, you know, if you look at that 46,500, the projected number of full time residents that came from the projections that everyone uses, and we add in what we're assuming are seasonal residents, you get 67,862 net gain of people.
In the 30-year period.
In the 30-year period, okay?
If that's the only amount we get, I probably won't live that long, but...
What's that?
I would lose a steak dinner betting that number is terribly low.
45? Well, you'll make it to 45.
You think so?
Absolutely.
I think, what did Mr.
He'll be sitting right there.
I won't.
I'd sign a contract.
That's okay. I mean, it's a good start. Let's not worry about it.
Okay.
Let's get this on our website. Let everyone chew on it and comment on
Great
it.
Great information.
Yeah. See what happens.
Nice job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good work.
Okay. Moving on. Historical preservation, community design. You got 5 minutes left. Good luck with that.
All right.
Hard stop at 12 o'clock today, folks. So
we have
some members of the public that want to speak, so we got to leave time for that, so let's drive on.
Okay. You are all provided with a draft chapter. So the main changes in the chapter this time, we're adding a vision. We're adding a large section on county historic preservation activities and the role. We have a section on historic preservation partners that's new. Other historic resources and historic preservation funding entities, I think was a request by Bob to add that. And then the goals, objectives, and strategies, which we've beaten into the ground many times now. So the yellow that you see in your draft chapter is new text. So that's how we're differentiating anything new, is yellow. I just want to point out one thing that is still coming on this chapter. I'm working with Dan. And I mentioned before that we have a copy, a very long copy of a full history of Sussex County.